promotional movies for the game. To date, none of the Keeper-sponsored games had released official promotional videos prior to their release, aside from short videos to be used as advertisement. A feature-length film was unheard of for these games. A smile crept over his lips, ideas forming in the back of his mind. I think I can work with this. Keeper's World, A Forgotten Time, by Justin Miller. Chapter 1. I sat within my office, diligently looking over a stone slab that had been brought to me for examination. According to the team that brought this over, this was a relic from one of the last worlds visited before the memetic monster struck, making it difficult to visit the scene myself to get a better idea about their society. Huh? Oh, right. I should probably start with introductions. I am Helen Dower, an archaeologist working with the Deccan College of Historical Civilizations. Our college exists for the purpose of memorializing lost civilizations that were unable to show their glory to the world before being swept away with the passing of time or other events. There was always something to learn when you delve into these extinct civilizations, whether they had unique technology or simply an interesting custom. For instance, on the 61st floor, we learned how to create a device to better channel natural energy, which has been recreated and given to the Sylvans to help with their forests. As for this civilization, while it may not have been technologically advanced, everyone deserved to be remembered in history. That's what I was here for. Let's see. It looks like they called themselves the Jahul, according to this section, I muttered under my breath, my eyes glowing a faint gold. As I read over the stone slab, the characters on its surface began to twist, forming comprehensible words that I could transcribe onto a fresh sheet of paper. Or, I would have done, had it not been for a knock on my door that snapped me out of my thoughts. "Helen, are you in?" a voice called, and I let out a long sigh. "If I say no, will you go away?" I asked, in a half-joking tone. I never liked having my work interrupted, though this wasn't as bad, given that I wasn't out in the field. It was still mildly annoying. "That depends. Are you interested in a set of new ruins found on Fior? Due to the level, they're only accepting god-level researchers." When I heard that, my eyes snapped to the door, quickly standing up. If there were new ruins, that meant that it was either an unexplored floor or something that had been uncovered on a previous one. Setting aside the Jahul tablet, I marched my way over to the door, eyes shining as I drew it open. "Jordan, please, come on in. It's been so long since we had a good talk." Unlike myself, Jordan was a Kitsune. His short silver hair formed a stark contrast with his bright red eyes. He gave a knowing chuckle as he stepped inside. Immediately he spotted the tablet on my desk, arching a brow. "Another one of those relics from the Lost Worlds?" he asked, in a soft tone, to which I nodded my head. "That's right. There's a chance that we might not be able to find their world again, so I had been working on deciphering what I could from the relics that were brought over. Still, they won't be going anywhere. But there's always the risk that a ruins might collapse, especially on an upper floor of Fior, right?" Jordan nodded his head at that. "That's right. We'll be sending you to the 65th floor this time, so there are some things that you need to know." I blinked in confusion when I heard that. "Sir, 65th? I thought we only just got to the 63rd not too long ago." When I asked that, Jordan shrugged his shoulders. "Apparently one of the Keeper's servants pushed through to the next two floors in just a couple of weeks. Regardless, she made a report on the 65th floor. First of all, there are dangerous entities on this floor known as bomb bubbles. They are large, bubble-like entities that will explode when anyone gets too close. Mixed in with them are especially vicious ones that release a black energy that will consume anything close to them." I nodded my head at Jordan's explanation, already imagining that such creatures may have been the downfall of an old civilization. "And the ruins? According to the report, it is likely that the ruins belong to an ancient form of the bomb bubbles, and they are located on the ceiling of this layer of fjord. That is one reason that god-level researchers are required, to save manpower transporting them. Also, although it may be painful, you would be able to withstand the explosion of one of these creatures. So, the bubbles themselves were actually the civilization? I asked, my eyes going wide. If they were in the form of a bubble, that meant that they had no limbs or distinguishing features, which would have made the development of a civilization particularly challenging. I could feel my tail wagging in excitement as I stared at Jordan, who simply chuckled. That's right. How long do you need to gather your tools? When he asked that, I immediately began walking for the door. I've got everything I need, I asserted happily. Is there a priest ready to take me to the floor, or do I need to find my own way? It was Fior we were talking about, so finding my own way could take quite a while. There is a priest standing by at Nexus, Jordan assured me, turning to quickly catch up as I rushed down the hall. Additionally, another point of interest was that it is believed the variant bomb bubbles could be the result of a mana siphon. You'll need to keep that in mind when you're conducting your research. I nodded my head, already thinking through how I would begin. First was actually getting to Fior. We didn't have priority use of the fairy ring, so I'd need to wait for the next scheduled connection. This would be so much easier if we had a void access token, I muttered to myself, but didn't voice those complaints. These tokens were only given to those who needed to regularly travel to the void for patrols or other important business. Casual travelers were still expected to take the rings. How long is it until the next connection? I asked, glancing over at Jordan, who gave a slight smile. Actually, because of the circumstances, we've decided to pay to let you use the temple's services. My eyes widened slightly when I heard that. There were two methods of getting around the queue for the fairy ring. The first was to have the void token, which would let you directly leave the world and bypass the void defenses to travel. The second was to submit a payment to the Church of Aurevi. Before the reinforcement of the hyperlane barrier, these fees were expensive, but still manageable if you were in a hurry. Nowadays, the price has skyrocketed, especially if you sought to travel outside of your original universe. Of course, you could still only travel from one church to another, so it wasn't as if they could send me directly to the ruins with this. You must really place a lot of importance on this. Jordan nodded his head in agreement. The ruins are apparently quite fragile, due to their position hanging from the ceiling. Some buildings have already fallen after they were just discovered, so we want to get our people there as soon as possible. Out of everyone we could send, you have the best chance of producing results without damaging the environment. I smiled proudly at that, turning to head towards the temple. I'll do my best. I knew what he was talking about with that, as I had tailored my domain specifically towards uncovering the truth of ancient civilizations. Originally, I had been inspired by the tales of the old civilization from Lorik. After obtaining the history domain, I went to cultivate in Lorik, cultivating the understanding domain there. In doing so, I uncovered the amusing truth of Lorik's ancient civilization, the fact that it was a facade orchestrated by Tubrak alone in order to guide the first cultivators. When I found this, I considered reporting it to the college, as the topic of Lorik's old civilization was the subject of much debate. However, despite how amusing it was to see the great dwarven god frantically running about to set up an entire ruined cities, I thought it best to allow him to preserve his dignity. Instead, I treated it as an amusing Easter egg, curious if I would ever find another such instance in any future ruins I visited. Finally, after I obtained my second domain in Lorik, I returned to have my third forged, completing my trinity. Now I was the proud Lycan goddess of history, understanding, and observation. Jordan quickly led me to the temple, where I found a halfling priestess already waiting for me. After bowing respectfully to her, Jordan explained that we were there by appointment, and she nodded her head. With a flourish of her staff, she opened a golden portal. "Step through here, and you will be at the church in Nexus," she said, with a gentle smile. "Thank you, priestess." I gave a respectful bow of my own before turning to walk through the portal. On the other side, another priestess was already waiting for me, though she looked confused when she saw my red hair, canine ears, and tail. "You are the researcher from Deccan, yes?" she asked, to which I nodded. "My apologies, most experts from Deccan." "Kitsune, I know." I shrugged my shoulders with a grin. "I'm used to it. It's not like there was any real discrimination or anything among the worlds. Rather, if someone wanted to settle down and pick up a high-level profession, they typically chose the world that was home to their race. Naturally, there were exceptions to this as well. As for me, there was no such college in Kyon, and the best facility that I could find was in Deccan. I was told that you would be expecting me and know where I needed to go. Yes, that's right, the priestess nodded quickly, happy for the change of subject. She tapped her staff on the ground, focusing as another portal appeared. This will take you to the 65th floor. When you're ready to leave, please send a message to the church, as the 64th floor is home to an extremely violent race. I blinked in surprise, but nodded my head. It would be nice if I could open these portals on my own, but I wasn't a particularly fervent follower of Auravi. In fact, I didn't have that much true faith for any of the Greater Pantheon. Admittedly, I respected the Greater Pantheon for all that they had done and the power that they wielded. However, in my line of work, I was able to see just how well other civilizations had developed outside of their protection. There may have been some disasters in the past that the Greater Pantheon saved us from, but I wasn't of the mind to devote my body and soul to them. I turned, walking through the portal. As soon as I emerged, I could see the clouds of floating bubbles in the air and feel the weight of gravity pressing down upon me. Unconsciously, I let out a low grunt, having to take a moment to stabilize myself before looking upwards. The ruins were damaged in their first discovery, right? Whoever found them must have flown directly. Shaking my head, I focused my mind to draw a teleportation spell in the air, sending me high above my current location. After my teleportation, I was shocked to find that the sky seemed no closer than before, even though I could confirm by looking down that I had risen far above the clouds. Gritting my teeth, I activated another teleportation, increasing the distance, and then another. After nearly an hour of teleporting, I could finally see the ceiling and the sprawling ruins that hung down from it. Of course, by this point, my mana was almost entirely spent, so I had to grab a blue crystal from my inventory to help me recover. Regardless, I had arrived at my destination, and it was finally time to get started on my research. Chapter 2. The ruins before me appeared to have once been rather firm, with thick stone columns connecting them to the ceiling of Fiore. At a glance, it looked like natural energy was involved, the columns appearing to warp down from the ceiling rather than be physically constructed with tools. However, that could easily be a misconception caused by the long years of wear. Floating over towards the nearest building, I was able to confirm that they had large rectangular openings that were at least 2 meters wide. On the inside, it was clear that it had been many years since the building had last been used, with any furniture that was once used reduced to hardly identifiable rubble. Still, I kept a smile on my face. This was what I lived for, what I trained for. Channeling my divinity, I activated my history domain to get a look at what this place once looked like. Many people questioned my domain choice when they learned of it, due to the taboo around time-related domains. It was a well-documented fact that anyone who attempted to time travel to the past was never seen again, nor did they appear in any historical records from the era that they wanted to time travel to. Traveling to the future did not seem to have any ill effects, but traveling to the past was seen as a death sentence. This was why I had to be very careful with how I used my history domain, as I was not traveling to the past. At no point did I ever leave my own timeline. Instead, I created visions of the past in a localized area. Slowly the rubble around me seemed to clear. A pile of stones in the corner turned into a smooth, semi-spherical cushion. Faded scratches on the wall turned into clear writing. Soon I could see a translucent bubble floating into the building and resting on the cushion. With a smile, I knew that I had reached the right era. Maintaining this window to the past, I turned and floated out of the home that I was in. My eyes widened as I saw the altered landscape before me. The ruined husks were now brilliant spires hanging downwards, spiraling bases decorated with spherical ornaments. Large bubbles floated everywhere, dancing around one another as colorful energy waves began to shine from their bodies. This was a scene that only I was likely ever to see, and I was careful to fly around so as not to damage anything. Despite seeing a window to the past, this was the equivalent of an illusion. The ruins around me were still there, and could be seriously damaged if I bumped into them by mistake. Turning my gaze to the side, I was able to see that there were similar cities scattered all throughout the ceiling of Fior, all with twisting spires and colorful clouds of bubble creatures. Given what I had heard from Jordan, it was likely that this civilization covered a large portion of this layer's ceiling. I'll take a look at what caused their downfall later, I thought to myself, floating towards one of the more imposing buildings within the city. For now, I need to learn what I can about the race as a whole. In order to properly navigate the ruins, I had to only see the window to the past through one eye. That way, the other was able to let me know if a path ahead had collapsed or was otherwise blocked. Because of this, I had to try multiple entrances to get into the largest building in the city, which was likely some form of palace or other administration building. These types of buildings were always among the best to get a proper view of a farce from an outside perspective, so long as you had the skills to do so. For instance, the ability to read and understand unknown languages, which I obtained through my understanding domain. As I entered the building and navigated around fallen columns, I caught sight of a particularly large bubble sitting at a high perch, with thin metal sheets lined up on a counter in front of it. Floating up to get a better look, I paused the playback of history to see what was written on those sheets. Let's see. Tax information, family registries. Fairly basic stuff. I nodded, letting the playback resume. Whenever a new sheet appeared, I took a moment to read through it. The simple fact that they were recording information on these thin metal sheets said a lot about their advancement levels. They were accomplished enough in forging to be able to create these sheets, but didn't use them as a primary component in building, as most of the metal I saw in the buildings outside were decorations. Additionally, they did not appear to have any methods of long-range communication, outside of manual delivery of written messages. Whenever one of these bomb bubbles, or Bolton, according to their own script, wanted to carry something, they would pick it up with mana and place it inside of their own bodies, where it would hover in place. I heard that they explode when startled. Is that an ability that they developed later, or just something that they have more control over at this point in time? I wondered to myself, as I kept reading through the metal sheets the city's administrator reviewed. There were mining reports, requests for funding for schools, all of the typical things that one would expect from a fairly modern civilization, though their technology was still fairly basic. I think it's about time for a direct interview, I thought to myself, moving to sit cross-legged in mid-air, across from the city administrator. There was only so much that could be learned about a civilization from studying relics. Most of what scholars discerned were guesses based on context clues that they pieced together. However, what if you could directly interview someone from the civilization you were investigating? My three domains stirred, and the administrator's spherical body shook. Hello. Before you become alarmed, please hear me out, I said, making sure to translate my words into a form that the Bolton would understand. I come from the distant future, and I am here to ask you a few questions about this time period. The surface of the administrator's body shook fiercely, and I could hear a voice translated from the energy it released. Who? What? Are you? You are no Bolton. That's correct. I nodded my head with a wide smile. I am what is known as a lichen, a canine-type bipedal creature. I come from a place far, far away. Oh, also, I'm only speaking to a projection of you. Once I'm done, you won't remember any of this. I could feel my tail wagging happily at the chance to directly interview someone from a lost civilization, while the Bolton seemed to hesitate. Why are you here, asking me these questions? I placed a finger on my chin, contemplating how to answer. There was no need to alarm him, as it would only make the rest of the interview more difficult. I'm a seeker of historical truths. Little is known about this time period of your race, so I wanted to come and speak with someone that appeared to be in charge. Our records did not persevere, the Bolton asked, and I could sense its gaze moving towards the metal sheets. They must have been lost to the Great Fall. I see. In that case, please ask what you need to ask. Thank you, sir. I smiled even wider, my tail swaying faster. First of all, what is the current name of this city, and the country that it belongs to? The Bolton's body shook slightly as it answered. This is the city of Elderspire, within the country of Alana. Have the names changed so much over time? No, sir. I'm just making sure to ask these questions to ensure the accuracy of information. It was never good to tell someone that their entire civilization faced downfall, as it would lead them to a panicked state, and the interview would need to be cancelled. Do the Bolton have any natural predators? I asked curiously. Immediately I sensed a great deal of confusion from the spherical creature. You see, in most worlds, a developing race will have some form of entity that poses a natural risk to it. In my case, well, there are too many to count, and you'd not know any of them.
I do not believe that there is anything that qualifies as a natural risk. There is only the Bolton and the Fall. I have never seen a creature other than a Bolton before.
I blinked in confusion, slowly nodding my head at that answer. Is that so? Can you tell me more about this Fall? Why would it be a danger to the Bolton? Can't you simply fly back up?
If we stop in time, the Bolton answered with a nod. However, if our bodies adjust to the atmospheric pressure below, it costs more and more energy to ascend. That's why we warn our children not to fly below the spires, as they may be unable to return.
That was interesting. Maybe that's why they don't inhabit the city anymore. They simply lost the ability to ascend high enough to reclaim their perch? No, there has to be more to it. Why would the entire race decide to descend so far at once? Do you have gods among the Bolton at this point in time? A god is a being with extraordinary power, often symbolized by a golden hue to their energy. Their power is derived off of a concept, and it is possible to have more than one. For instance, I am the goddess of history, understanding, and observation. This is how I am able to converse with you in this way. There was a pause from the Bolton, which seemed to be considering the question.
There are a few golden Bolton possessing great strength. However, I'm not familiar with the term god. It's possible that these golden ones qualify, though.
Very possible indeed. There are only a few causes for such unique appearances, after all. So they possess gods, no natural predators, and are advanced enough to educate their children about the dangers of falling. This is getting more and more curious.
If I may ask, the Bolton began, and I had a bad feeling about the energy I was feeling off of it. Did something happen to us? These questions. Surely some of this information would have survived the passing of ages. You don't seem like you're prying for strategic weaknesses, but rather trying to understand a group that you can't normally speak with.
I paused at that question before letting out a long sigh. I was hoping to spare you this information, but it seems that you've guessed it on your own. I snapped my finger, clearing the window to the past from the surroundings, and letting the Boltons see what the building looked like in the present day. My people found your civilization like this, and I am trying to uncover what happened to your people.
The Bolton shook more intensely at this revelation. Although it was still dangerous to reveal this news at this point in time, it would soften the blow if the target of the interview had a chance to realize it for themselves. In some cases, it even led to a more direct interview, with them willing to reveal sensitive information that may be critical to uncovering ancient secrets.
I see. That's why you were asking about predators and gods, then.
That's right. However, from what you've told me, I can't imagine what would cause your civilization to enter such a state. At the current time where I am from, the Bolton do still live, but they have all fallen beyond the limits of what you can see, and no longer have the intelligence that you are showing.
Is that so? He asked,
seeming as confused as I was by this information. That's right. Also, I have heard that a Bolton explodes when startled, but I haven't observed anything like that in this era. Additionally, given your style of building, there should be damage to the nearby structures if such were the case. At least this time the Bolton seemed to have some insights to share.
Explode? Ah, you mean when we pop. It's not something that we do when startled, at least not now. Our miners do it to more efficiently get minerals, but otherwise it is merely a decorative effect. Sometimes our people will fly below the spires, pop, and then get others to help them ascend when they reform. It makes for a brilliant display, and helps us clear out our energy.
I see. It's good to know that this isn't a new development. However, can you think of anything that could have caused this? An entity, criminal, or situation that would cause all of your people to fall? When he heard that, the Bolton paused again, thinking.
I don't know, if I am to be honest. To me, it is inconceivable that even a fraction of our kind would choose to fall, let alone so many. And if these ruins persist as they have, then surely it means that the buildings themselves survived the event. If that is the case, what could it be other than a choice?
Chapter 3. At this point, I knew that there wasn't much left that I could do for this Bolton, or more that I could learn from him without starting a new interview. If I wanted to uncover the truth of what happened to their people, I would need to look at a different time period, closer to when the event itself took place. However, there was still one more thing that I wanted to do. Before I send you back, there is one thing that I would like to ask, or rather, offer. The Bolton turned its attention towards me, but remained silent. Seeing that as an invitation to continue, I did so. I have a method of preserving a projection of your civilization. I often do this when I come upon people that have been lost to time, as a way to allow them to preserve their culture in some form. I have trained in a special technique, which grants me something akin to an imitation of a universe within myself. Through this training, I can save a moment in history and place it within that universe. However, I always try to get the consent of someone in a position of authority before I do this. There are those who would rather let their culture die with them, after all. The Bolton hesitated for a moment, seeming to think over the offer before nodding his head.
If that is the case, I would appreciate it if our people had the chance to live on, at least in some form. However, will this still lead to the same event that caused our decline?
This time it was my turn to hesitate. That depends on what the true cause is. If it is an outside force, that force would not be taken into my inner world. However, if the cause of your civilization's downfall was the natural progression of your civilization, there is little I can do without directly interfering, which is a rule that I set for myself. At most, I can choose to take your people from an earlier moment in history, giving you more time before that natural progression to the end. The Bolton seemed to huff at that.
If things are as you say, I do not believe that this is a natural event. I know of no reason why the Bolton would choose to fall.
Should I take it that I have your consent in that case? I asked with a smile, to which the Bolton nodded his head. Excellent. In that case, there are a few things that you should know. As the one that has provided consent, You will be aware of this interview, but nobody else will. This is so that you can alert me of any looming crisis. I might not be able to directly interfere, but I might be able to give you alone information that could be used to avert the crisis. The Bolton shook slightly as he accepted this information. I see.
Very well.
Obviously, nobody would just believe him if he came out and told others the contents of this conversation, and he was no doubt aware of that. This was quite a heavy burden to put on his shoulders, but this is why I always asked for consent from someone in a position of power before doing this, because that person would be responsible for shaping the future of their race and trying to avert potential disasters. Closing my eyes, I allowed my divinity to stir. Within my inner universe, I chose a star isolated from the others, one empty and devoid of life. After that, I allowed my divinity to expand, extending the window into the past to cover the entirety of this floor. This was the largest area that I had ever covered with a single window, so it caused considerable strain on my focus, requiring me to concentrate on every small detail that my divinity touched a world with a diameter of nearly 3 light-years. Perhaps it would have been better if I had done this with the residents of the 61st floor as a form of practice, but the person that I spoke with there asked for their culture to be allowed to fade into the past. They recognized that they brought their destruction on themselves, and saw it only fitting to allow their civilization to disappear as the consequence to their mistakes. It took me, I don't know how long. I sat there, brows tightly knit in focus as my divinity stretched out more and more, until finally feeling as if I had completely covered this layer. Once that was done, I let out a low sigh of relief, and the window into the past began to shrink. This process was substantially easier because I was no longer adding new details to the window, and instead merely bringing it into my inner world. Even so, it took almost half an hour before the process was complete, the window into the past now looking like nothing more than a grain of sand hovering over my finger. Closing my eyes, I brought this slice of history into my chest, letting it merge with the world that I had chosen for it in my inner world. Once I finished relocating this slice of time, I looked around at the ruins surrounding me. As the Bolton administrator had been part of the window into the past, he was naturally sent into my inner world as well. There's nothing more than I can immediately get from this building. I'll need a proper view of the city if I'm going to see what happened. Thus, I left the spire that I was in, heading out to the open air, and began to open a new window to the past. Because I had just taken one slice of time into my inner world, I wouldn't be able to observe that general period again, or anything within a week of where I pulled from. Honestly, I wasn't entirely sure why this was the case. I only knew that it was what I had noted from my past experiments. As I was starting to open my second window, I felt something buzzing within my pocket, pulling out my terminal and noticing that I had several missed calls. Another one was coming in from Jordan, and I blinked, answering the call. "Hey, what's going on?"
"Oh, good, you answered," Jordan said with a sigh of relief. "What's going on with you? You went off the grid for a while. I was expecting a report last week on your initial findings, and you wouldn't answer my calls."
"Last week?" I asked, my eyes going wide.
Just curious. But how long have I been out here?"
"It's been about a month now. Is everything okay, Helen?"
There was genuine concern in his tone, and I quickly shook my head. "I'm fine. There hasn't been anything dangerous or anything like that. I guess that it must have just taken me longer to perform a large-scale sweep with my divinity than I was expecting, and I lost track of time."
That said, I was still amazed that it had taken me an entire month to establish that window and bring it into my inner world. Usually it only takes me a few minutes at most.
"In that case, is there anything that you would like to report?"
Jordan asked, and I shook my head again. "Not yet. I need a little more time. It's hard to express how large this place is with just numbers. I'm still in the process of my initial checks, so I will let you know when I have something concrete that I can report."
After I said that, there was a bit of a pause, Jordan seeming surprised by my request for additional time. I could understand his surprise, however. Typically, I saved my reports for after I did an initial investigation, an interview, and then a detailed look at what caused a civilization's downfall. After that, I would look through the past to find relics that could support my claims, and use all of that as the material for my reports. Even with all of that, I had never been late to file my report before. However, like I said, it was hard to express just how large this layer of Fjord was with simple numbers. It was to such a scale that it seemed ridiculous to even compare it to something. I could walk the earth 1,000 times over, and not even come close to the distance. I would fall simply by releasing the ability holding me aloft. The entirety of Deccan could be lost in a single cloud drifting beneath my feet. "I understand. In that case, I shall await your report," Jordan said, before ending the call. As much as I wanted to share my experience talking with the Bolton administrator, it was best to do so after I had completed my full routine first. After all, anything before that is just hearsay, as nobody but myself is privy to the information. Only when I provide solid evidence can it be truly taken as fact. Turning my gaze back to the window into the past, I saw that it had solidified at what appeared to be the next available moment after what I had pulled previously. Everything still appeared to be fine with what I could see, and thus I began the process of narrowing down the timeline, shooting forward 1 month at a time, and looking for any significant changes. After a few skips, I saw 3 large golden bubbles floating amidst the crowd, likely the gods that I had heard about from the administrator. Focusing my divinity in my right eye, I saw that they were the gods of wind, light, and water. I made a mental bookmark at this point of time, planning to follow back their personal history later, to learn how such natural-born deities came to be. However, the main thing that I wanted now was to find the reason for this civilization's downfall. Everything could be considered secondary until I learned what caused that. Every now and then I would have to pause, seeing a rather low number of Bolton floating around, and had to investigate the nearby buildings to make sure that they were all just inside, as opposed to having disappeared. Still, this was a long, slow process, the scenery around me changing every time I blinked. After passing through more than 100 different windows, I began to fall into the monotony of simply investigating and moving on. Eventually, however, I was forced to pause, my eyes going wide. What I saw was not a strange entity within the city, but rather something below. A green flash of light drawing a line throughout the sky below. At this distance, I was barely able to make out a humanoid shape. And, given what I knew, there should not have been any humanoid creatures within this layer of Fjord at any point in history. Curious, I dove down towards the figure, finding that it was far further away than I had initially imagined, and far larger. It took me more than an hour, flying at a safe speed to avoid damaging any of the ruins behind me, before I managed to find the figure wrapped in the green glow of natural energy. "Is that James?" I blinked, moving around to get a look at the dark-skinned giant's face. Surely I had never seen him this large before, but the face and body structure was unmistakable. However, why was James in a place like this? Long before the lair was even open to the public. "I suppose that's another mystery that I will need to bookmark," I thought to myself, shaking my head and returning to the ruins above. There was no evidence of his passing by the time I hit the next frame, so it was clear that he didn't stay for long. Maybe the passage that he used to arrive is the same passage that whatever caused their downfall used. That was starting to become a rather significant theory in my mind, but the question of what could allow such passage still existed. Shaking my head, I put that thought aside, moving on to the next frame, whereupon my entire face turned pale. The city was covered with a black smoke. No, not smoke, just some strange energy that resembled a black cloud.
The Bolton were fleeing downwards, some of them detonating in an attempt to push back the cloud and provide their kin an extra push. Turning my gaze, I found that this black cloud was not limited only to the city. Instead, it covered the entirety of Fjord's ceiling. Everywhere I looked, a rolling black mass covered the sky. Well, I found the right point in time. Now I just need to slowly cycle back and see what actually caused all of this. Chapter 4. My eyes narrowed while watching the black mass atop the ceiling of Fjord. It was currently night time, so I might not have noticed the mass at all, if not for the faint glow of the Bolton and their decorative lights placed around their spires. From what I could tell, it did not appear to be doing any damage directly to the buildings, but any Bolton that was caught within it dissolved immediately. I watched the scene play out for a few moments before starting to rewind time once again, hour by hour. It looked like the black mass seeped down from the ceiling, making me worried that there might be some danger on the upper floor that was able to bypass the black stone wall. If that was the case, this was a major emergency, and I would need to report not only to Jordan, but also the Guild as soon as I confirmed the truth. Soon I was able to see the black mass disappear into the ceiling above the Bolton cities, but something was bothering me. I had gone back more than 18 hours at this point, but the world was still in its night-time period. All layers of Fjord, regardless of their size, had 12 hours of day and 12 hours of night. Granted, particularly large floors could have multiple time zones due to the light taking longer to reach them. But the fact remained that any individual point should only experience 12 hours of night at a time. Closing my eyes, I directed my sight towards my inner world, the new slice of history that had appeared within the universe. I didn't know exactly where the crystal spire would be located on this floor, so I was doing this as a way to find it without having to manually teleport all across this massive expanse. Eventually, I found the crystal spire and compared it with my current location. My mana surged around my body, and I teleported to the coordinates of the pillar. Upon my arrival, I saw a spire over 100 kilometers wide, shattered within the window through time. From what I could see, this had actually happened quite a long time ago, with the broken crystal even starting to show signs of regrowth. I held out one hand and began to revert time once again, this time to uncover the source of the crystal's destruction. Jordan had said that the variant bubbles were likely to be the result of a mana siphon. If that was true, then the black mass that I saw was likely just the first stage of that siphon. After all, the sheer amount of mana that would be released from this pillar's destruction, as well as the mana unable to find its way back afterwards, would be more than enough to trigger an apocalyptic siphon. So, I simply needed to know what had caused this thing's destruction. Had a divine Bolton attacked it for some reason? Going back a month did not give me any information, nor did another. On the third month, the crystal was completely intact, so I began to cycle through one day at a time, and then back 1 hour once the crystal was destroyed again. This allowed me to accurately see the battle that led to the destruction of the pillar. That's right, a battle. In a land where no creatures other than the Bolton existed, there was a battle raging. Fire, lightning, and wind were being thrown against a massive, disembodied hand. This hand had 7 fingers, each finger having a glowing red eye at its tip. In the center of its palm was a mouth more than 50 meters across, with 12 thin tongues stretching out and grabbing at the nearby structures. The Bolton were fighting back as hard as they could, but it wasn't enough. Their attacks did not so much as phase the monster, while it could grab an entire building to swallow in a single gulp. One of the Bolton directed a blast of lightning at one of the monster's 7 eyes, only for the other 6 to glow red. The window to the past became filled with static at that instant, causing me to step back midair in alarm. When the static cleared, the Bolton were fighting one another, detonating and destroying their own buildings. Nobody was attacking the giant hand anymore. Had it not been for the static that I saw,
I might have been confused. However, that static was an automatic safety measure that I created to avoid observing civilizations destroyed by the void. This static will only occur when a memetic power is captured by the window, and it will completely obscure the source of the power. The fact that the entire window was obscured meant that, in that moment, the power completely filled the area. With its path unobstructed, the giant hand began devouring other nearby buildings, eventually leading the Baltans to scatter and attack other cities. Meanwhile, the hand moved to grab the crystal pillar. As soon as it did so, cracks began to appear along the pillar, its light fading. Within the pillar, I could see a rush of blue being drawn into the mouth on the palm of the giant hand. "This is bad," I gulped, my eyes wide. At this point, I knew what caused the fall of civilization, as well as the appearance of the predatory siphon. Two fears combined into one when the crystal shattered. First, there was the fear of the unnatural darkness, which seemed to consume everything. Secondly, there was the fear of the rogue Baltan that had been charmed by this giant hand. Given the circumstances, the first fear likely outweighed the second by a significant margin, which led to the first stage of the siphon being the black mass. Then, as it developed, the fears of those who had encountered the rogues began to further evolve the siphon, leading to the creation of the mutated Baltan. Knowing this was all fine, but there was something more important for me to do right now. Pausing the window on the moment when the hand crushed the pillar, I called out with divinity in my voice. "I issue an urgent call to any of the greater pantheon who will hear me. A dire threat to the safety of Fior has been found, one that could endanger everything that we know. Please, answer this summons." My voice echoed out against the surroundings, carrying with it a faint golden glow. I couldn't be bothered with the fact that my voice caused another building to fall. Not at the moment. There were few enough buildings left in this region anyways. I waited, maintaining the window while gritting my teeth. For 5 minutes there was no response, and I took a deep breath to shout again before a voice appeared behind me. "We're here." Turning around, I saw four figures standing in midair. There was the pink-haired halfling goddess of love, travel, and dungeons, Auravi, the elven goddess of magic, merchants, and wealth, Rion, her daughter, the elven goddess of void, space, and gravity, Leowen, the lycan goddess of wisdom, wind, and the hunt, Acalia, and finally, the human goddess of peace, battle, and the ocean, Behenna. "We don't usually get calls like this," Acalia said with a small smirk, crossing her arms. "I hope you have a good reason for summoning us here." I nodded my head, stepping to the side. "Please, take a look at what I've found. I am Helen Dower, an archaeologist sent to Fior to research the newly discovered lost civilization. In doing so, I searched through this area's history and found something that I believe you will all agree is worth the call." The five goddesses stepped forward, peering through the window that I left hanging in the air. "A giant hand?" Auravi asked in confusion. "I thought only bubbles lived on this floor." "They're called the Baltan, and that is correct. This entity does not come from this floor. Until this moment, it was locked in battle with the local Baltan forces, which failed to inflict any damage on it, despite possessing their own deities. If you look at the tips of each finger, where the eyes are, one Baltan attacked those eyes, and it triggered a memetic ability that caused the Baltans to begin fighting each other and destroying their own homes." When I said that, the goddesses tensed up. Leowen pursed her lips, staring into the window. "Can you provide a more detailed simulation? I need to discover if this is a monster with memetic properties or the true manifestation of a void beast." For how the others looked, neither of these were good options, but one was significantly worse than the others. Thus, I nodded my head. "I can, but it will use a considerable amount of energy. Additionally, the moment in time I will be recreating will be frozen, to prevent it from activating its power while we are observing it." The five goddesses nodded their agreement, and I began to focus my divinity. Fully recreating a moment in history was something that I only did in rare circumstances, when I needed to observe the energy composition of an artifact for research purposes. Gradually, the window began to widen, moving to wrap around the entirety of the mana pillar. As it did so, the hand seemed to materialize, frozen in a single moment of time. Once you enter the area of the projection, you will be able to sense everything as if you were there in that moment, I told them, and Leowyn began to walk forward. I won't be joining you, because I have to focus on maintaining this as a simple window, rather than a portal. There was some strain in my voice as I said this. The more I simulated history, the more I ran the risk of transitioning from a simple observation to a full portal. So far, I had crossed that line once, and it made me lose one of my hands to the period I was observing. Granted, I was able to regrow it, but I was never able to find it again after it was lost. Fully simulating an area this large, I had to maintain total focus. Thankfully, I heard Leowyn speaking a few moments later after she exited the projection. "It's done. You can stop," she assured me, and I closed the window entirely. Now that I had learned all I needed from the past, I did not need these windows anymore, other than simple fact-checking later.
"Well, Leo?" Aurevy asked in a serious tone. "Which was it?"
Leowyn hesitated, glancing in my direction. "You're the one that discovered this, so you have the right to know. It was a mimetic monster, but it was heavily tainted with void corruption." Rian's eyes widened when she heard that. "We have to find the connection point on this floor, and destroy it immediately." "There's something else," I said, lifting a hand as they turned their attention back towards me. "It's not as bad as this, but during my investigation I was able to confirm that the researcher James visited this layer of Fior, a little more than 2 years before this incident occurred." Aurevy's eyes twitched when she heard that.
"I thought you said it wasn't as bad," she said,
causing me to tilt my head in confusion. Aurevy turned to look at the others. "We need to find out if this thing took the same exit he did. If it did, there's the chance that it could end up at the natural core, or any of the other floors he's visited."
"Right," Behenna nodded firmly. "You go with Helen to investigate the path that James and this creature took, as well as their origin points. The rest of us will look for any connecting material on this floor to begin sealing."
With that, four of the five goddesses disappeared, leaving only myself and Aurevy. Aurevy turned to face me, putting on a forced smile.
"Sorry to ask you to do this. However, we need to trace that thing's path through this floor. Afterwards, we'll need to do the same with James to see if there is any overlap."
"Are you worried that this thing is connected to the researcher?" I couldn't help but ask, causing Aurevy to blink and quickly shake her head.
"Oh, no, nothing like that. However, there's the chance that they took the same path when traveling. If that's the case, we need to find out if there is a danger to the other floors. This thing, it didn't come from one of the floors of Fior, but rather above the surface. If not for the black stone walls, it could destroy all of Fior just as easily as it did that pillar. As it stands, its destruction is limited to only a single floor at a time, but we don't know where it will appear. To be honest, the worst-case scenario isn't even that it followed James to his next destination. The worst-case scenario is that it came from James's destination. That would mean that there was another connecting point between the surface of Fior and the inner layers that we haven't found yet."
I nodded my head, feeling my body tensing up at the thought of that thing being set loose on the other layers. As she requested, I opened another window, resuming from the moment that the crystal was destroyed. If I had to do this, I'd make sure that I saw it through. Chapter 5. After the others left, it was just Aurevy and myself, studying the hand together. "Where do you want to go first?" I asked, looking at the halfling goddess. "Its origin or its destination?" Given that we didn't know how long the hand remained in this floor, either journey could take us quite a while, so I left it to the goddess that was more likely to understand things like this than myself. Aurevy thought about it before shaking her head.
"We should go for the origin first. No matter where this hand ended up leaving for, its origin is a source of danger that we need to take care of before anything else comes through. Assuming nothing else has, so far."
I gave a firm nod at that, looking at the hand that was frozen within the window of time. Given the size of Fior, we'll need to work together if we want to get this done quickly. If we follow its path in real time, we could be spending years to follow it back to where it came from. Aurevi smiled, seeming to accept this fact readily. You're not wrong there. This was the first time that I had ever directly interacted with a member of the Greater Pantheon. Sure, I had seen Tubrok's past antics on Lorik, but I had never interacted with one of them face to face, not until today. Taking a deep breath, I focused on how we could get this done. If we use my observation domain as the primary force, designating the hand as the target of observation, we should be able to narrow what we are observing with your travel domain and my history. Typically, I use the history domain as the foundation for my abilities, but that wasn't going to work this time. If I used history as the foundation, and then threw in Aurevi's travel, there was a good chance that we could wind up traveling through time by mistake. Aurevi appeared to understand what I was thinking, nodding her head in agreement. So instead of following them manually, we'll use a trinity in order to get a complete record of its travels, and then we just need to visit the destinations listed. Do you think you can set the results up in the form of a list like that? Preferably, we want a highlight of anywhere where it stayed for more than 8 hours, as well as both where it appeared on this floor and disappeared. I can try, at least. This is a mimetic creature, according to Leowen, right? If I try to show too much information, I might get us infected by mistake. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to keep it simple. With another nod, Aurevi held out a hand, producing a golden sphere of divine energy. She had a soft smile as she passed the energy to me. Use this for the Trinity. It should have more than enough energy for what you need. Admittedly, I hesitated for a moment before I reached out to take the Orb of Divinity. I could sense that it was disconnected from Aurevi herself, meaning that she had severed her mental connection with it. At a guess, she must not have wanted her thoughts to conflict with my own when setting up this divine ability. Still, the amount that she gave me, it was at least half of my total divinity. Even if I used it for this ability 20 times over, there would still be plenty to spare. After all, travel was only a support domain in this trinity. Still, I focused, shaving off just as much divinity as I needed, and creating 3 golden orbs. One of these orbs contained the shavings from Aurevi's divinity, while the other 2 were my own observation and history domains. Aurevi stood off to the side, waiting patiently. The creation of a new divine ability is never an entirely simple matter, especially when you are making one out of multiple domains and need it to fit an established idea. The fact that I was doing this for a single-use ability with someone else's domain was not helping. With my eyes closed, I focused on the ability that I wanted to create and began to establish an external divine circuit to use for this activation. Thin lines began to stretch out from each of the 3 divine spheres, moving as if bound to an invisible grid, until they all met in the center. At this juncture, the lines became a thin orb that seemed to pulse unsteadily. This was the embryonic form of the ability that I wanted to create. Only once I had completely solidified the image of the ability did the node stop pulsing. It released a dim glow, awaiting activation. Okay, it's ready, I said, exhaling a long breath that I hadn't realized that I was holding. Aurevi nodded her head, and the 2 of us looked at the window to the past together. The newly created ability flashed, and a yellow file folder appeared in my hand, containing a thin stack of papers. After I opened the folder, I quickly glanced through each of the pages, letting out a sigh of relief. I included a basic mimetic censorship in the observation domain. If any information were to be displayed that contained mimetic influence, the text would become a black smudge. Given that sigh, I'm guessing that there wasn't any, Aurevi smiled, and I gave a nod of acknowledgement. That's right. As I spoke, I kept the external circuit maintained, not wanting to dismiss it just yet. After all, this hand wasn't the only thing that we would need to track, as I would need to do so to James as well, once we had traced this thing back to its source. Looking at the first page, I placed a finger on the first line. The initial entry says that it arrived in a large cave, There should be a trace of the coordinates if you can follow them to the source.
Oh, that's easy.
She grinned, golden mist forming around our bodies. The first line on the page lit up in response to her power. When the mist cleared, the two of us were standing at the entrance to an enormous cave, leading into the side of a mountain whose peak I couldn't see. The opening of the cave showed some obvious damage, chunks torn out and scorch marks visible within deep carved grooves.
Was there a battle here or something?
Aurevy asked, and I focused. The second set of information attached to the line activated, containing the timestamp for me to establish a window. Aurevy stepped closer, making sure that she could see what I was looking at.
I'll open the window a minute before its arrival, I said, and she nodded her head.
When the window opened, there wasn't a cave on the side of the mountain. I blinked in confusion, fearing that I may have set the window far too early, until a sudden crash could be felt from the other side. Even as just a simple window, the energy felt like it would break through and reach us. I gulped, clenching my fists, as the side of the mountain exploded in a flash of red light. What emerged from the cave wasn't just the seven-fingered hand, but rather an entire arm, all the way up to the elbow. The hand slapped at the ground, clawing into the dirt and trying to pull itself out to no avail. Its shape twisted, clawing at the mountain and firing various destructive attacks that reshaped not only the mountain, but the surrounding landscape. Any one of its attacks looked as if they could destroy a nation, but Aurevy's eyes trembled in realization.
It's not just a hand, Helen. It's trying to pull its full self free.
When she said that, I realized the significance of what I was seeing. For starters, the palm of the hand did not contain a mouth, nor did the fingers have eyes. While the shape and color were the same as before, these were rather striking differences. These differences were soon explained, however, when a black line appeared along the wrist of the extended arm. Black and red energy stretched out as the hand pulled away from the rest of the limb, snapping like thin cords. Once the hand had completely severed itself, it fell to the ground while the rest of the arm retreated back into the cave. The hand twitched, writhing as the palm opened up. Sure enough, it gained its mouth and eyes after separating from the main body.
So, this thing's full body comes from the other side of whatever is in that cave? I asked, and Aurevy nodded her head.
This is both good news and very bad news. It's good that we have the direct connection here, so we don't have to worry about any other connecting points in the future. But it's bad because the fact that this is a direct connection increases the chance that other things have come through as well.
They wouldn't have come through before the hand, at least, I pointed out, gesturing towards the cave.
That thing had to tear open the mountain to get out.
Aurevy gave a nod of agreement.
Before we find out where it left, can you modify that new ability? We don't need many details, just a number. How many creatures have entered this floor through this cave, but did not leave through it?
I paused at that question. It wasn't that hard of a modification, to be honest, and I could understand what she was wanting with it.
All right. I gave a weary smile, quickly making the adjustments. The ability flashed again, and a single sheet of paper appeared in my hand.
Aurevy glanced over at the sheet, nodding her head.
Okay, it could have been worse. This is still very bad, but it could have been way worse. Every connecting point will narrow down how many of those monsters get through to the correct destination. They could easily have taken entirely different paths after coming here.
I glanced down at the paper, seeing the number 5 written on it.
So there are 5 monsters from the surface of Fior roaming around somewhere in Fior, having passed through here. Let's seal this place before that 5 becomes a 6. I feel like just holding this paper is tempting fate.
Tara wouldn't be that mean, but I know what you mean,
Aurevy agreed quickly, extending her hand.
Her hand began to glow with a deep golden light that shot into the cave.
This should nullify any kind of spatial or extra-dimensional property for any material inside the cave. After she said that, she began walking into the cave, and I followed along behind her. Although she said that she had nullified it, that wasn't necessarily the same as destroying it.
For all I knew, it could have been a temporary measure. Thankfully, we didn't have to walk far into the cave before we got our answer. There was a large ring of white stone that lined the wall at the very back of the cave, looking as if it were a natural version of a fairy ring. Did your power completely sever the connection, or is it going to recover over time? When I asked that, Aurevy had a rather troubled look on her face. I severed the connection, or so I'd like to say. However, I have no jurisdiction over the other side. If something attempts to pass through again, it will cause the connection to start recovering. If we want to completely remove the risk factor, we have to annihilate that white material so that not even a speck of it remains to form that connection. That sounds easier said than done. Does it have to be so thorough? Aurevy gave a firm nod of her head. That's right. If even a single fragment of it is left, it will be able to operate as a portal. Although it might not be able to let as big of monsters through, sometimes the smaller ones are more dangerous. Should we call the others, then? I asked, and Aurevy turned to look at me. We could, but none of them are particularly specialized in such utter destruction. Rian could probably do it, but it would cost her. Thankfully, we have you here.
Me?
I asked in confusion, looking around to make sure that I didn't mishear her. That's right. Aurevy confirmed, a grin slowly forming on her face. You're going to send that entire chunk of material into the past. Aurevy's request was not something that I was entirely confident in. I had accidentally created gates to the past before, but those had always been unintentional. Rather, I had always been careful not to do exactly that because I was aware of how much danger it could pose. You want me to transport that entire gate into the past? I asked, gulping. Aurevy nodded her head with that same smile.
That's right. After doing so, one of two things will happen. Either the material will register as utterly destroyed and the link will be broken, or anything that attempts to come through the gate will be sent back in time as well. At the very least, this confirmed beyond any doubt that time travel was a death sentence. Otherwise, I could not fathom why a member of the Greater Pantheon would ask me to send such dangerous entities back in time. I turned my head to look at the orb of divinity that Aurevy had given me. I had to wonder. Did you know that we would need to do something like this? I asked, knowing that the orb had far more energy than I would need for simply finding a list of locations in the past.
Well, I certainly suspected it might be the case,
Aurevy admitted with a wide grin. Sealing minerals like this isn't easy, even for Rian. And with the danger here, the only surefire method is totally removing it from this timeline. I decided to play it safe, and it looks like it paid off. I gave a small nod at that, taking a deep breath. For this one, I needed to use the travel domain as the basis, with history backing it up to determine the destination. Thus, the connection with the observation domain was temporarily severed, but it would be easy enough to restore the ability later, now that I had made it once. Despite the dangers involved with this ability that I was creating, it was actually very simple in nature. All that I needed to do was send an object back in time. If anything, it was easier than what I usually do with my windows. The air within the cave began to shimmer with a golden light, which rolled out and wrapped around the white material lining the walls of the cave. As it did, I was able to sense the divinity pushing deeper, the material more than just a simple ring. Instead, it seemed to form a long tube that ran in a twisting pattern within the mountain. Thankfully, the divine ability was more than enough to wrap around the entirety of this material. The golden shimmer in the air condensed into mist and then properly faded away. After it did so, the material was nowhere to be seen, and I let out the breath that I had been holding. Nearby, Aurevy closed her eyes before smiling and giving a firm nod.
All right. That's all for this patch, she said, pausing to give me a weary smile.
This patch? I asked. And the other goddesses from before appeared at the entrance of the cave.
This one taken care of?
Behenna asked curiously, to which Aurevy nodded.
That's right, just finished. How have things been going on your end?
Rian let out an exhausted sigh.
There are 78 other nodes throughout the layer that we were able to observe,
For the time being, they're all sealed off, but we don't have a way to completely destroy them. And without any safety measures, we don't have a method of seeing where each of them goes to know which ones are safe. My eyes bulged out at the number that Rian reported, while Aurevi simply blinked.
78? I was sure that there would be more. I guess this material is even more rare than I thought.
Well, at least we've got the best method of getting rid of it right here.
She grinned, hopping up to slap me lightly on the back. I felt my heart sink into my gut, realizing just what I'd be spending the rest of my week doing. I only came here to learn about an ancient civilization. This concludes World Keeper, Chaotic Times by Justin Miller. Narrated by Stephen Bell Davies. Copyright 2024 by Justin Miller. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Justin Miller and was produced in the year 2024 by Tantor Media Incorporated, a division of Recorded Books, which holds the copyright thereto. Please visit tantor.com for more information on our growing library of unabridged audiobooks.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.